Welcome to Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. You can email me with questions at commonlaw7b gmail.com. I just checked my email because I hadn't checked it and I don't have anything new from anybody. But please ask me a question, and I'll apologize now for clearing my throat. I've had this little chest cold for a while that it's not enough to be anything but annoying. I haven't talked to you guys, I don't think, since November, and I don't know when in November, but I don't know if we talked about the University of Idaho, that quadruple murder case down there. I hope that people learned a lesson when everybody was screaming and yelling about not knowing anything. Well, they can't release information because the more they release, the more this person knows about they know about him. And then you end up with a situation where he's off in the woods in Canada or wherever. The only thing that I think is interesting is this guy is a PhD in criminology, and he's casing the joint with his cell phone for weeks. And then he leaves a knife sheath on the bed with his DNA. You know, maybe he just isn't that smart and, you know, panicked or what. But it really wouldn't surprise me if something strange came up when this thing finally goes to trial. He looks pretty guilty, but it looks so guilty that it's kind of like, I don't know, it just seems weird to me. I guess that's my little conspiracy theory. Which doesn't mean a conspiracy, it just means that not everything is the way it appears, you know, when you're looking at it through the eyes of the press. Another big thing that happened that I thought was just amazing, but the whole world kind of took it like we have aliens in our airspace. I mean, nobody seemed to be as excited about it as me, but it was the net positive fusion reaction that they created. And to me, I mean, that is the holy grail of everything. What that means is that they put in a certain amount of energy and the reaction they create creates more energy than they put in. In essence, it's in a perpetual motion machine. So it just creates more and more energy. It's, you know, how your sun works, and they've never been able to do it. You know, they could create the reaction. I actually have a client who has a little fusion reactor. He showed it to me and asked me if he wanted to turn it on. And I said, no, I think I'm good. But he said, that's the problem. You can create the reaction, but it takes more energy to do it than you create. So there's no point in doing it. You just use the energy for something else. Well, this, it means that, you know, some people think by 2030, they'll have a fusion reactor. And once that happens, then, you know, I'd get out of fossil fuels if I were you. I might get out of them before then anyway. And the other thing that I thought was really interesting that I think happened in September, but I didn't catch on to it until recently, was at the University of Illinois Chicago, is they figured out a way to take 6 metric tons of carbon dioxide, you know, byproduct of producing energy or whatever, and turn it into 1 metric ton of something called ethylene, I think it is. But it's like the main ingredient that they use to make plastic. And, you know, that's another thing that they've been chasing forever, is a way to recapture carbon and not just release it into the atmosphere. Maybe you don't care. You don't think that's a big deal. I think we can all conclude that probably not a good idea to put more than we already are putting in there. Anyway, I just wanted to share a little bit of things from the news in the last couple of months before we go to our first break. But what we're going to talk about when we get back is stuff having to do with estates. I've danced around, you know, I talk about trust and this and stuff, but this is a little bit more, I think, of a kind of a game plan for you. So maybe on the break, if you get a chance, go get a pencil and a piece of paper and take notes, or just remember you can get on the radio station's website and listen to it again. But I think it's a little more of a practical application of, you know, what you do with estate stuff. And with that, this is Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein, and we will be right back.
Start the new year off right by visiting Grunberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet. They have preparedness and homesteading books and supplies, emergency rations, food storage supplies, ammo and knives, jewelry, ReadyWise foods, and more. They stock items that you won't find anywhere else in our area. They buy, sell, and trade. Open weekdays and located on Triangle Drive, just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Grunberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet.
From all of us at Winter Ridge Natural Foods, we want to thank you and wish you a happy new year. We can't wait to help you enjoy healthy, delicious, and affordable meals all year long, whether it's pantry basics you need, fresh produce, or something special from the deli. Follow the orange sun tags to find hundreds of items throughout the store to find the price point you'll love. Shop at the store or order online and arrange curbside pickup at winterridgefoods.com. We're here so you can shop smart and eat smart. Winter Ridge, the community choice on the corner of Lake and Boyer and Sandpoint.
Well, hey, Don Thomas here with Sandpoint Furniture, hoping that all of you had an enjoyable Christmas time with family and friends and looking forward to a happy and healthy new year. And you should know that our buyers have headed off to the winter furniture market to bring in all the latest fashions and designs in home furnishings. So that means that we're going to need to clear our current inventory to make room for the new arrivals. Sandpoint Furniture is offering you a fantastic opportunity to get a great deal on furnishings for every room of your home. Living room and bedroom sets, entertainment consoles, dining room tables, desks and bookshelves, area rug, lamps, and more. Keep a special lookout for all the bright color tags on pieces, offering anywhere from 10 to 50% off normal pricing. And while you're here, don't forget to check out the available savings at our clearance store right across the way. Also, it might help to remind you that we offer 12 months interest-free financing with no minimum purchase. So at Sandpoint Furniture Carpet One, helping you bring on the new year in style for over 70 years.
Wesley Financial Group is not a law firm.
This story is called The Ugly Truth About Timeshare. If you think you've done your family a favor by buying a timeshare, you need my help. Hello, I'm Chuck McDowell, CEO and founder of Wesley Financial Group. 10 years ago, I started helping folks cancel their timeshare. In the process, started what's now called the timeshare cancellation industry. Timeshare is the only thing that you can buy that you can't tell me how much it's going to cost or when it's going to end. When you buy a timeshare, you give them a blank check to fill out any amount they want for annual maintenance and assessment fees. The crazy thing is, this never ends. Even when you die, your family's now going to be stuck with this burden. Stop the insanity today. Call my office now. If we take you as a client, I guarantee we'll cancel your timeshare or you'll pay nothing.
Call for your free information kit. 800-786-9300. 800-786-9300. 800-786-9300.
Missed a noon hour? Check out the audio at our new website, NorthIdahoRadio.com.
Welcome back. This is Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. Shoot me an email, a question. Maybe you'll have some questions after we go through what we're going to talk about next. But since there is some recommendations in here, I want to again be clear that this is not legal advice. And you relying on what I'm going to tell you and making an estate plan and trying to do it on your own, that's not very smart. That's about as smart as doing your own estate plan. So you just need to hire an attorney if you want to do this, and don't let them overcharge you. Because, you know, unless we're talking about big estates, taxes, or super complicated estate plans, you know, they should not be charging you too much for these documents. And why I'm talking, I'll try not to, but if I use words like grantor or testator or testatrix, which is just old English way to say the person who died and who wrote the estate plan. So if that slips out, that's what I'm referring to, is the person whose estate plan we're worried about. So anyway, if you know somebody like a parent or whoever, and you want to know about, you know, if they want to know about their estate plan, you know, the first question is, do they have a will or a trust? And if they have either, or they can remember doing them but can't find them, then, you know, get the documents if they have them. But if they don't have them, see if they can at least remember who the attorney was who drafted them for them. Attorneys will hang on to those kinds of files for a long time. A guy named Paul Vogel retired a few years ago, and I maintain all of his estate files. And so when they call, they get a hold of me, and I dig up, you know, when somebody passes away, and we have those documents. If they do find them, then review them and see what they say. And if they're fine, then just make sure that the people who should know where they are. Original wills cannot be maintained by your lawyer. We can only keep a copy for you. That's a rule of ethics. We don't want the bereaved widow coming to us to get the original will, and then we'll take advantage of whoever. So if you can't find the original of a will, then don't panic. If you have a copy, that will be fine. But it, you know, if you have it and it's okay, you could just redo it and sign it again. So you have an original and you keep the original in a fireproof safe, whatever. But if you get to the next step where they either can't find or don't remember if they have ever done anything like a will or a trust, well, then, and they think it might just be easier to start new, there's a way to do that. But so if you want to really be belt and suspenders about this, or for example, if you're going to get on a plane in 2 days, you and your wife, and fly to Hawaii, then, you know, you're probably not going to get an attorney to draft one up for you in 2 days. So what do? You sit down and in your own hand, and I mean entirely in your own hand, and all of it, meaning the whole document, not your signature, everything, every bit of information on there needs to come from your own hand. Maybe not all of it from a technical sense, but if it is all, then that eliminates one potential question down the road. It's a thing called a holographic will. And if you're in Idaho, when you do it, you're fine. Not all states allow them, but Idaho does. And so what I tell somebody who wants a will is sit down and write it all out in your own hand, and then take a copy of that, keep the original somewhere safe, and then you mail it to me. And then if you die in between me getting that done and getting a formal, you know, set of documents together, then you have a basic plan at least in place. So that's the reason I do it that way, because I think I told you the story where I took all this information from this lady who had 15 kids and they had 40 acres off of Bunko Road, which is now worth a lot more than it was then. And those two kids had taken care of her the whole time, and she wanted to give it all to them. And they called me and said she'd had a heart attack, and she was in the hospital. And I said, look, it's done. And they got notaries, and we got witnesses. Let me just come down there. No, no, she'll be fine. Yeah, she died that night. So 40 acres between 12, 15 kids as opposed to the two boys that were supposed to get it all. So that's why I do it that way. And it wasn't a big, long delay. It was only like a couple of weeks, but anyway, so what should this handwritten thing say? Okay, first and foremost, and this is what most people don't understand, is you do not need to identify everything that you own in your will. You don't need to lay out every piece of property, every gun, any of that. You know, it's best in your will to say, here are my kids, and you know, lay out that you know who your children are, and you can lay out generally, you know, what you think you own if you want, but it's not necessary, because this will can simply say, for example, like my mom's will, which wasn't handwritten, but it said my entire estate and 3 equal shares to my 3 kids. And if you do it that way, then, and like in her case, had she had no will at all, then that's what would have happened anyway, per the statutes that control what happens when you don't have a will. But when you do it that way, what it means is, like, the personal representative can split it up any way the personal representative thinks is equal, meaning, and there's not much that can be done about it, meaning if the personal representative wants property A and he says, I'm taking this and you two can have that, well, that's fairly hard to challenge, which is why, you know, it's better if you want to have a little more information and say, well, I want Billy to have the house, and then I want all the cash to go to the other kid, for example. But you just start it off by say, you know, I, and state your name, and being sound and disposing mind, hereby make my last will and revoke all prior wills and other testamentary instruments. That way, if there is something out there, this one revokes it. And the next thing you say is, who do you want to be what we call the personal representative of your estate? The personal representative, and this is what a probate does, and probate is not scary. As we've discussed many times, avoiding probate is no reason to set up a trust. Probate is just a court proceeding that has almost very little involvement from the court itself, really, other than signing things, where a person basically is appointed as personal representative, and that person steps in basically into the shoes of whoever just died. So whatever accounts that person could access, whatever property they owned, you know, this person now has total control of it. But they're a fiduciary for all of the people who are supposed to get the estate, meaning that if it's you're the PR, but you're not in the estate, well, it's not exactly a very fun job. It's not a fun job anyway, because there's no advantage to being PR. You can't do things that the will doesn't allow, and you can't ignore what the statutes say. So it's, you know, somebody who you think would be willing to do it, but you should pick a backup. Because as I said, it's mainly just a pain. But if you want, you know, if you want the person who you want to do it, you can specifically say, and they get paid, you know, by the hour, or they get $5,000 for handling this all, or whatever. But a lot of it's common misperception that being personal representative of an estate gives you some kind of an advantage. Like in my mom's estate, it would with me if I wanted to do something that my siblings didn't want to do. Well, that's never happened. So that was handy. But that would be the advantage if I wanted to like take this piece of property when we all should, you know, rightfully have a third of it. But other than that, you know, you can't do it what's not fair and what's not even. So you write it all out in your own hand and you just say, who do you want to run your estate? And then you just say how you want it to be wrapped up, meaning, excuse me, I don't know if I can mute it by hitting the button. I think I can. I'll try that next time. Is who gets what and how you want it to go. And other thing you want to put in there, if you have children that are underage, make sure that you lay out who is going to be in charge of them and who's going to be in charge of any money that you're leaving them. Sometimes it's good to separate the person with the money from the person taking care of the kids because, you know, maybe Billy, who's only 1 year old, all of a sudden now needs a new Duckworth fishing boat. It just kind of prevents that from happening. You like to think that it wouldn't, but people get funny ideas, which is how I make my money in life. But that's a big one because you don't want people fighting over your kids. So you've got just these basic things in there. You sign it, you save the original, you mail a copy to whatever lawyer you want to turn it into a fancy document. Now you've got a basic will. Should, you know, anything untoward happen between the time you decide you want to write one and when it actually is put into a formal document, usually what you'll send in, an attorney will have some other questions for you. It's when I did this class in law school, I mean, it was a lot of fun. We just killed everybody. You know, okay, what happens if we kill all these people? And so it's a topic that nobody ever wants to talk about. But, you know, when your parents or whoever say, oh, you kids will figure it out, you get along, just say the radio guy loves that. He loves it. I mean, you might as well just put him in the will when you think that way. You know, maybe 90% of the time that is the way it works out. But you'd be surprised how things change when the matriarch or the patriarch is no longer around. So unless they really want to line the pockets of a bunch of attorneys, it's worth getting it done. Anyway, I think we're coming up on our second break. This is Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beistlein. Email me at commonlaw7b@gmail.com if you have any questions. Otherwise, we will be right back.
Beck's Furniture Store on the South Hill in Bonners Ferry is a longtime sponsor of youth sports. They know what it takes to make a team. And the team at Beck's Furniture is ready for a sale. Always a sale of savings going on. So make your play and come on in to Beck's Furniture Store and say hi. Beck's Furniture Store on the South Hill in Bonners Ferry, proud sponsors of Badger Sports.
The Pondere Winery has so much to be thankful for as we reflect and look ahead to a great new year. We are releasing our 2021 Cabernet Sauvignon as January's Wine of the Month. Enjoy discounts on glass pours and bottle sales of this stunning wine all month long. We welcome the Sandpoint High School students' artwork as they show off the fruits of their labor in our tasting room at 301 Cedar in downtown Sandpoint. Go to powine.com or visit our Facebook page for a full list of events and music for the month. Wishing you and your loved ones a healthy and prosperous new year from all of us at the Pondere Winery.
Wesley Financial Group is not a law firm.
This story is called The Ugly Truth About Timeshare. If you think you've done your family a favor by buying a timeshare, you need my help. Hello, I'm Chuck McDowell, CEO and founder of Wesley Financial Group. 10 years ago, I started helping folks cancel their timeshare. In the process, started what's now called the timeshare cancellation industry. Timeshare is the only thing that you can buy that you can't tell me how much it's going to cost or when it's going to end. When you buy a timeshare, you give them a blank check to fill out any amount they want for annual maintenance and assessment fees. The crazy thing is, this never ends. Even when you die, your family's now going to be stuck with this burden. Stop the insanity today. Call my office now. If we take you as a client, I guarantee we'll cancel your timeshare or you'll pay nothing.
Call for your free information kit. 800-786-9300. 800-786-9300. 800-786-9300.
They said it's a physically demanding job. I said, so what? Give me the shifts, the hard work, the unsolvable problems. I'll take it. Give me the broken tech, and I'll build a bird that flies again. Give me the benefits, the money for college, and the on-the-job training. Yeah, I'll take that too. But don't give me the title maintainer in the Air National Guard. I'll earn that too. They said it wouldn't be easy. That's exactly why I love it. Sign me up.
Higher education. It's a call to challenge yourself to embrace a future better prepared for success. A test of your ability to reach further, to know more and do more, to understand yourself and our world better. An opportunity to grow your potential, to make a difference in your life and in the lives of others. This is the path that leads to Idaho's public colleges and universities. For you, for us, for Idaho.
KSPT, KBFI, North Idaho's radio.
I'm happy, hope you're happy too.
Welcome back to Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. I'm sure most of you know that's David Bowie. It was one of the very first songs on MTV. I always remember watching it thinking it was very strange. Anyway, we've been talking about estate planning, and we've now, you know, done a few things to talk about getting the plan together. Now I think we'll move on to the fun topic of when somebody has died. But I gotta just take a break and comment. We're into the second round here, and I haven't said anything about politics at all. And if you're lucky, there might be enough stuff here for me not even have to, but I'm pretty sure I'll find a way to get to it because there's just too much to talk about. But anyway, so someone's died. Let's say like the last of your parents. The first thing you do is mourn, but I'm not here to provide that sort of information. I don't, you know, that's how you deal with that on your own. What do you do, though, as far as the estate goes? Obviously, the very first thing is to figure out if they have a will or a trust. One of these two documents is going to give a person or a group of people the ability to control what goes on now. And before I forget, I'm always bagging on trust. In the previous part, I meant to actually say, you know, when you have a lot of money or even a little bit of, even, you know, 50 grand or even 10 grand, and you have underage kids, you know, that's where a trust can be a very valuable tool. Like I said, you know, my kid it'll all be in a trust. She'll never, ever be able to have control of it. And that'll all be protected because it's not her money. It was mine. So like, for example, you say, well, I'm going to give all this money in trust for the benefit of my kid. Depending on what you're talking about, you know, most people say, well, until he turns 18. And then I say, well, now, wait a minute. We're talking about a $5 million estate potentially if you die tomorrow. You want him to have $5 million when he's 18? No, probably not. And so how you usually write it is, you know, the money is there. The trustee is to encourage self-reliance. The trustee doesn't have to make any distributions. But, you know, the idea is that make sure your kids always got a roof over their head, even if they are just playing video games all day. But so that is a good place to use a trust. And if you don't use one, you just need to make clear that whoever is the conservator of your kid's money, you know, that they're to manage it until, you know, whatever age you think is appropriate. I never looked into whether or not that's actually enforceable. I think you could only do that with a trust just from the nature of what a conservatorship is. which is basically saying you're incompetent to manage your own affairs. Well, when they're 18, if they're not incompetent, I don't see how that would work. So if you want to protect it like that, that is where you can use a trust. And you can write that in your own handwritten will. You can just say, I give it to whoever, the money in trust for their benefit, you know, pay for a 4-year accredited college and try to keep them, you know, doing the right thing as far as working and whatever. And you could write that right in your own hand also. Anyway, but one of your parents has died, you find out if they got a will or a trust. Okay, if you can't find a will, you think one exists, you don't know, you can still get yourself appointed as personal representative. So, for example, if there's bills to be paid or if there's accounts you don't know what's in them or whatever, you basically apply to be personal representative. Now, who can do that? Obviously, a spouse or a child or a sibling or even a creditor, meaning that this guy owed me all this money, he's died, nobody's probating his estate, and I need to get paid. Because if you don't probate an estate within 3 years, or you know, we're not going to get paid. And you can't sue a dead person. So if I need to sue somebody who's dead, well, then I appoint myself as PR and sue at, you know, in the capacity as PR, or they have some division for that. So if you apply to get yourself appointed as personal representative. Now, usually what will happen is you could fill these documents out. I wouldn't recommend it. It's, as I said, probate is form driven. It's, you know, unless there's a fight, then, you know, it's just easy stuff. And if there's a fight, it won't matter if there's a trust or a will. It won't make any difference. There's going to be a fight either way. So you apply to the court, and generally what will happen is the court will appoint you as personal representative before anybody else who potentially is interested in this estate knows that has occurred. But then these people get notice that you have been appointed. So for example, if you got appointed of your parents' estate, but you knew where your 4 other siblings are, they would just get notice you'd been appointed. At that point, if they don't like that, then they have to come into court and try to get you either unappointed or get themselves appointed with you, or, you know, something to that effect. That's, you know, that's one type of fight that happens in probate. But let's just say for now that you are the PR and the personal representative, you know, what is your first job? Well, the very first thing is to immediately identify all the assets and make sure they're secured. What comes up a lot up here is somebody, you know, moves into the home. There's nobody really keeping an eye on the homestead, and then they pass away. And by the time anybody gets around to getting out there, all the pipes are broken and blah, blah, blah. So the first thing is to figure out what this person had and secure it and make sure it is secured. Unfortunately, a lot of people think that because they're related to somebody when they die, they can just open the door and head on in and grab the TV set. So, you know, you need to get locks, change the locks. You don't know who has keys. I mean, because really you are a fiduciary to the estate. So if you let all the pipes break and, you know, you had reason to know what was going to happen and all the furniture gets ripped off, well, you're on the hook, which is another reason people sometimes don't really want the job. There is potential liability if you don't handle it correctly. Now, if you showed up on the scene and all that had already occurred, well, that's not, you know, until you can get yourself appointed or had some reason to, and you're okay. Meaning that if you're appointed in the will as a PR and you just tell people I'm not doing it, well, then you never step into that role and it's on somebody else to come in and do this. So, number one, identify everything, make sure it's secured. Then you identify everything that's owed. Basically, you're just adding up the assets and adding up the debts. And then you put all this into a big document called an inventory. And the PR actually doesn't have to file an inventory with the court, but they do have to give it to the heirs with a certain amount of time. This is, you know, an example of why I don't like trusts. Because, you know, a trust may or may not have this requirement. And we'll talk more about that at the end. But so you gather all the stuff up. And do you need to like hire appraisals and do all that? Not for the inventory initially. I mean, you could use tax values of things. But, you know, eventually when it gets down to how do we distribute this and who gets what, you know, you're going to need to know, obviously, if you're talking about parcels of land, which we usually are talking about up here, you know, what they're worth, so you know how you can divide them and, you know, and make sure you can follow the will if that needs be. If the will doesn't care about values, it's like you get X, she gets Y, and he gets Z, well, then you don't need appraisals. oops, sorry. Sorry about that. Somebody needs to come in here and Lysol this mic when I'm done. So once you file the inventory, the other thing you do is you publish in the newspaper where the person passed away, and maybe in some other places, depending, a notice to creditors. And what that does is it basically says you have to, anybody who's out there who maybe wants to have a claim against this estate, the whole point in a probate is that you can wrap it up quick. Because ordinarily you would have to hold, for example, if I'm under a written contract with somebody, well, they have 5 years to sue me. And so what this notice to creditors does is say, no, you've got so many months to make a claim against the estate. And if you don't, your claim is barred. And then if they do make a claim against the estate, well, then the estate has so many days to say, no, we're not paying that. And if they say, no, we're not paying that, then the person making the claim then has so many days to sue the estate. And what that does is just shortens up all the time frames for wrapping up these, you know, potential outstanding claims. That you do it by publication. But here's the other thing that people will, you know, not tell us about. Is, well, yeah, I saw the Verizon bill, and yeah, I saw the cable bill, and yeah, I saw the, well, when you see those bills at this person's house, now you know they have creditors, and you know who those creditors are. So you actually have to mail them the notice that you put in the paper directly to them, advising them of the time frames, and then their time frames are based on when you mailed it, as opposed to the dates that anything was published in the paper. So, yeah, make sure and remember that one, because we get that all the time when we publish on people that we don't have, mean that we can't on. For example, bills that our clients knew were out there but didn't tell us were out there, you know, because they didn't, I don't know why they don't do it, but sometimes I think they think they're helping you. So once this creditor claim period passes, and if you've done it all correctly, well, then the only thing left to do is figure out what's left and figure out how to distribute it to the people who are entitled to it. And that sounds easy, but it can get complicated because, for example, if the estate is consists of such assets that, in essence, you can't pay the estate bills unless you have to sell something, well, you know, what does Johnny lose the house or does Jimmy lose the cabin? You know, one of them's got to go. Or does Johnny have to pay that bill so we don't have to sell Jimmy's cabin? But then Jimmy has to pay Johnny half. I mean, it can get weird. But the most part, it's not. You know, for the most part, it's, you know, people have an idea. When it gets really weird is when they don't have an idea, or if they do, they don't think they need to write it down. But I think we're coming up close to our next break. This is, again, Common Law 7B. We've been talking about, you know, estate planning and what to do after someone dies. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about some of the pitfalls that I've mentioned a few on the show before of homegrown estate planning. And with that, we'll be right back.
This year, give yourself and those you care about the gift of health and fitness at Natural Fitness Gym. Let Natural Fitness tone, shape, and energize your body with the area's largest equipment selection, cardio, and clean atmosphere. They have 24-hour member access. Natural Fitness gives you two locations at one great price, in Sandpoint on Superior Street and in Pondere on Schweitzer Plaza Drive. Give the gift of health and join Natural Fitness today.
Hi, this is Lauren with Knutson Chevrolet. The Knutson Winter Savings Event is on now. We have a new 2022 Chevy Equinox LT all-wheel drive for only $28,277. That's a savings of over 13% off MSRP. And we have a 2022 Chevy Silverado Crew Cab 4x4 for only $39,987. That's 11% off MSRP. You must show proof of current lease or ownership of a non-GM product 2009 or newer. Price after all rebates. Expires January 31st. Knutson Chevrolet is your family-owned, family-operated dealership since 1939 that puts customer service above all else. Visit Knutson.com to schedule your at-home test drive and even purchase your next vehicle online using ShopClick Drive. Find new roads at Knutson Chevrolet, minutes west of Coeur d'Alene, just a short drive east of Spokane at 1900 East Polson Avenue, Post Falls. Knutson Chevrolet, hard to say, easy to save.
Hi, this is Rich from White Cross Pharmacy. We wanted to let you know that we are still providing COVID shots, including the newly authorized booster shot. We also have regular flu shots and the high-dose shot for seniors. COVID clinics can be found at www.idahoprepmod.com. Just hit Find a Clinic and then search for White Cross in location. There you'll find our clinics. If the internet isn't your thing, give us a call to get your shot scheduled. You can find us at whitecrossrx.com. White Cross Pharmacy since 1922.
Only in a boat at the Spokane Boat Show. The boats are back. Live in-person show, 4 days only. You will see the newest model boats, cruisers, all kinds of fishing boats, pontoon party barges, personal watercraft, and ski runabouts.
Only in a boat, only in a boat, only in a boat.
The Spokane Boat Show is family fun. 4 days only, January 26th through 29th. Find the hours on our website. It's easy to compare, and there's major boat show price reductions from the manufacturers and local dealers. Plenty of free parking at the Spokane Fair and Expo Center.
It's the place to be with all of your friends and your family. Feel the magic when you float.
Only in a boat, only in a boat.
It starts Thursday, January 26th, 4 days only. The Spokane Boat Show, sponsored by the Spokane Yacht Club.
97.1 FM is North Idaho's radio.
Ashes to ash and fun to fuck it. We know Major Tom's a junkie, strung out in heaven's high.
Welcome back to Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. I was listening to those ads on the break there. I like the boat show ad with the reggae music and all that. I think more appropriately would be Boat Drinks by Jimmy Buffett. I shot six holes in my freezer. It's been a long winter. We're only a month into it, and we got more snow coming. Hey, on that note, just a little request. If you got a passenger, go ahead and let them out of the car. And then snug your car right on up next to the snowbank. I don't know if you've noticed, but the city plows leave the banks a good 3 feet off of the curb. So when you're too lazy to pull your car up next to the snowbank, you're really creating a hazard. So I know it's a hassle, but and really if you do it right, you don't even have to do anything extra. You just stop for a second. So anyway, it just drives me crazy. Anyway, we were talking about estate planning. And someone's passed away, and what do you do, and what's a probate look like? And again, probate is not scary. Don't be afraid of it. Don't do a trust to avoid it. I think I told you about the story of the brother who was the successor trustee. The trust is the number one pitfall of an estate plan, if you ask me. And what's the main reason? Because if you don't even have a copy of this thing, then you don't know what it says. You don't know what the trustee is supposed to be doing. You don't know if they're doing it the way they're supposed to be doing it. And they can do anything because they're the successor trustee. Now, once in a while, these people will run into a savvy bank or a savvy buyer of a piece of property that's going to say, well, if you're a trustee, I want to see the trust. You know, I want to know, you know, if the brother was supposed to get this house and you weren't supposed to sell it, you know, if they didn't know about it, I think they'd be fine. But, you know, they could be belt and suspenders and want to make sure that they're buying from something that this guy's supposed to be selling, but it hardly ever happens. And so I told you the story when the one brother was successor trustee and he was supposed to give the house to the brother and he got all the quote cash. So he sold the house and turned it into cash and was going to keep it all. Until I gave him a phone call and was like, yeah, that isn't going to work. And the nice thing was the brother who was to get the house, the guy who I talked to, he didn't want the house. And the other brother did a really good job marketing it and got a great price. So it worked out in the end. But again, that's why I don't like trust, because the only way for you to know anything, if this person or people are not communicating with you and you don't have a copy of the trust, and even if you do, is to take them to court. And that is just, you know, that's a horrible position to be in. At least in a probate, whatever everything says, everybody knows. The court knows it. All the heirs know it. You have to give them the information, which you may have to do in a trust also, but you can't do anything when you with a probate unless you start a probate. You don't have any power until you do. So when you do that, everybody then knows everything. So that's why I don't like trust. As I said, they serve some certain limited purposes, like protecting your kid from blowing his estate on an espresso stand in the middle of nowhere. But other than that, and tax purposes, which I know nothing about. So what's another pitfall of estate homegrown estate planning? And that would be the joint account. And I don't mean your frequent flyer account at one of the dispensaries in Washington. I mean a bank account that has more than one name on it. And people have this funny idea, and they do it for reasons that I don't understand. You know, they put people on so they can sign checks and blah, blah, blah. You can do the same thing with the power of attorney. But people really have a hard time understanding that just because you can access the money doesn't mean it's your money. And when those accounts exist and somebody passes away, well, they just get drained. And now, you know, who knows what they did with it. You're chasing them now. Chasing money is never where you want to be. You want to hold the money and then give it to people if they have some good reason to get it. You do not want to be going after it. That's what these accounts do. Now, there are certain ways to create an account that, for example, if my name is on it, when you die, it all goes to me. And that's called a, you know, an account with basically a thing referred to as a right of survivorship. Now, if that's on the account, then yeah, the intent was that the, whatever's in here when this other person passes away is automatically the property of this other person. So it's another one of the pitfalls is that arrangement along with insurance proceeds. So on the joint account, for example, let's say this person has $1 million estate and part of it is a $400,000 joint account with a right of survivorship. Well, that account is not part of the estate. It doesn't count. So, like, for example, in my situation with my family estate, if my mother had died with $1 million insurance policy, which she didn't, unfortunately. No, I'm teasing. Well, sort of. Anyway, and it named me as the beneficiary. Well, but then we had $600,000 in property. Well, I'd get a third of the property and I'd get all the insurance proceeds. So those are, you know, those are things that are kind of out there. And another way it happens is in like these D.A. Davidson accounts or the Edward Jones accounts. There's this provision in there called transfer on death, which is basically the same as the right of survivorship. Now, all of those things, I think, are subject to being clawed back is what we say, meaning that if I have $1 million D.A. Davidson account with a pay on death to my wife and I have $500,000 in creditors, but, quote, my estate doesn't have anything, well, the law takes care of that and claws it back into the estate. I don't know about that for life insurance proceeds because it's not really something you own until you're dead. But I'm pretty, I know for transfer on death accounts and joint accounts with rights of survivorship, it, you know, it can be pulled back into the estate to the extent necessary to make sure the creditors are paid. I've only seen that a couple of times. What is the other one? Oh, the other big one that comes up is almost always that it's the people who think that they have somehow they're entitled to something different because they were doing something more for mom and dad. And, you know, unfortunately, about half the time, there are people that didn't care till mom and dad got really old. That needs to be, if that's happening now with one of your siblings or whatever, you all need to come to a clear understanding of what that means. I mean, there is legitimate value in having them there if they want to provide certain services, but you need to identify what it is they're to be doing and how it is they're going to earn whatever it is they think they're entitled to. Anyway, that's just a little nutshell of those things. I get a lot of questions about those. What other estate documents would I recommend? General durable power of attorney for healthcare. Not a general durable power of attorney, just for healthcare. This is the document that says who's in charge of you if you can't be in charge of yourself. That same document should also have a nomination for a guardian. You know, who's in charge of you if you can't be in charge of yourself? So, you know, the general durable power of attorney will give this person the ability to talk to your doctors and to do things for your benefit. But if anybody comes in and wants to start a guardianship, if they get it, well, that overrides that. But if you have this nomination in that document, that can't ever happen. It's just another way to avoid, you know, having people pay lawyers when they can't figure out what to do with your money or you. The other thing we do commonly when we do these for, you know, we do these free for veterans, and part of the set, the last one is what we call a living will. And that's what I think most of you know what that is. If you've had surgery, they sometimes will make you do them in the hospital, which is, you know, I can't tell anybody what to do. Here's what I want to happen. And usually it's three choices. Give me everything you can. Keep me alive. Don't give me any food. Give me water, or don't give me anything. Most people say give me water, but no food. You know, if it's basically a pull the plug situation, they do their own research and make their own choices. So that's a little bit on estate planning, and it looks like I've got a little bit of time left, and so I just want to comment on a few things. Do you remember the term flip-flopping? I think it was like 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago, maybe longer than that, when that was like, if they said you were a flip-flopper. How it usually came up is if you slightly reconsidered a prior position you had ever taken on anything, they called you a flip-flopper. I think that was their fancy way to say a hypocrite, which, you know, I love hypocrites. So, but apparently that is no longer relevant at all. I mean, you have Donald Trump sitting on all these documents, and not one Republican other than Adam Kinzinger or Liz Cheney said one word about it ever. And then they find some at Biden's residence, and they're just off the charts about, oh, how terrible it is and how, you know, Trump was totally treated differently than Biden. And that is the stupidest thing I think I've ever heard. I mean, if you buy that, then you buy, obviously, the election was stolen and whatever other nonsense these people come up with. It is not the same thing at all. That's like the same thing as saying a guy selling fentanyl, that's why he's holding it, is the same thing as a guy who finds it on the street and is walking to the cop shop to turn it in. They're not the same thing. To be very clear, folks, nobody would even know about Biden's documents if he hadn't self-reported. This wouldn't even be an issue. The archives didn't even know they were gone. They just found them and they thought, well, we better turn them in. Oh, and also, if you want to know why he didn't reveal it before the midterm elections, he was told not to. I mean, he has done nothing but cooperate with the Department of Justice. And for anybody to say that Trump somehow got treated differently, well, yes, he did. You're right. You're correct. But not because he had documents, because of what he did when they wanted them back. If you don't want your car to be searched pursuant to a valid search warrant or your house, well, then just let them in. And they won't have to go get a warrant, or give them what they know you have and you keep denying that you have. I mean, it's just baffles the mind to even think that you could say that these two actors are on the same par. Anyway, I don't know. I got about a minute. So I hope you all enjoyed the fight for the Republican speaker. You now have basically a guy who traffics in teenagers, whether they're underage or overage. Either way, it's a money deal for somebody who's under 20. He's now on committees and stuff in the Republican House controlled. Whatever, it just disgusts me. And why? Because they couldn't all get on the same page, and I would have just crossed the aisle. I would have gone over there and just found 8 or 9 reasonable Republicans and said, hey, which one of you guys wants to be Speaker of the House? Because we'll support you before we support this moron. Now we have George Santos is on a committee. Basically, a guy who has admitted that his entire life is a bunch of BS has been put on committees. I mean, he shouldn't even be there. I've got 30 seconds. Anyway, it's just winds me up. I waited till the end to get it out. I didn't start with it because I wanted you to listen to the rest of it and not have me upset you. But really, if you think you could make some argument that Trump and Biden don't deserve to be treated differently for committing allegedly the same offense, which is nowhere near, well, then let me know. Send me an email. We chat it out. Anyway, thanks for listening. This is Arthur Beislein, commonlaw7b@gmail.com. Thank you again, and we will see you all next month.